They think that by keeping things a secret, you'll be more successful. And they don't realize by networking and throwing your ideas out there, just put it out on the table, chat with people about it. You'll learn, you'll gain 100 years of trial and error in just a few days by chatting with people. So just throw your thing out there.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Mayor Waldman is the founder and CEO of Nexus Towers and is the driving force behind its growth and continued success. He is motivated by a desire to help lease owners reestablish their power in lease negotiations and sales. Mayer draws on over a decade of real estate investment and lease experience. And prior to establishing Nexus Towers, Mayer served as CEO of Premier Properties, where he organized commercial deals worth approximately $25 million and underwrote and managed assets worth $50 million. Mayer, welcome to the show.
Hi, Sam.
Good morning. Thank you for taking the time to come on today. I'm excited to jump in and talk really about the cell tower industry or the tower industry as a whole. Maybe you can help, you know, kind of clarify some of our thinking on that. But before we really dive deep into the nuts and bolts of the industry you're involved in right now, do you mind giving our listeners just a brief introduction of where you started, where you are now, and quickly how you got there?
Sure. I'm happy to do that. So I started out dabbling in tax maps in my local area. I live in New Jersey, and I kind of got to know how to look up tax maps from the local townships and study the zoning maps, identify parcels that sit in well-zoned areas and they're underdeveloped. And I then hand-wrote envelopes, stuffed them, and sent them to the owners, telling them I have an interest in talking about buying their property. I did that out of my apartment. I sometimes had my son on my lap, you know, he was playing toys, and I just did it, continued doing it, sent that 100 of envelopes each year. And I had some great hits. There's some developments in my area that I actually sit on land that I started it all years ago by just sending an envelope out of my apartment. So I was inspired by that. And I continued to move on from there by introduction from a friend into the commercial space, where a group of investors had an interest in jumping into the industrial space in New Jersey. So I made a license and I started getting to know all the brokers in the space. And I was touring a few warehouses a day. I was on the road getting to know them. And we actually bought some deals and we had them under management. And I was dealing with everything involved from starting to underwrite a deal and throughout the management process of holding the asset and negotiating leases and lease end and all types of repairs. A lot of fun stuff. In the process of being involved in commercial real estate, I came across wireless leases and I actually sold some as representing the ownership group. We cashed out on some antenna leases. And I was inspired by the value that sits in these antenna leases. And I was even more inspired by the lack of knowledge by professional attorneys, great brokers. Just everyone seemed to not have clarity on these antenna leases. They just related to it as an extra income, something not so important. It's worth X amount. Someone said it might be worth that. But I just said, you know, something here that I need to specially focus on. And I started doing that. And I started connecting with people that are more invested in the space, kind of like a side job. They also knew something about antenna leases. And I learned so much. And I said, you know what, there's a lack of consultancy here. There's a need for a kind of a firm of consultants that have the knowledge. They could just guide property owners. And the real clicking moment in my mind was when I decided that every day in the United States, there are probably 100 property owners that are signing amendments, leases, just blindly. They have no clue what they're doing. And they're giving away so much value, probably hundreds of thousands of dollars a day. And the number might be higher than that. And I said, let's put a stop to this. We have to do something about it. So I kind of did that. And I jumped into it. And I made my mission to identify people that share core values. They're just good people, but they're the finest consultants in the space, people with experience. And I started doing that by just connecting with them. LinkedIn was a major resource for me to identify people's profiles and see where they come from, and then just have a chat with them and see if this is my candidate. This is a person that I could proudly partner up with. And I'll continue to do that because you keep on growing the network. We're currently 10 people. The most senior of us is an individual that's 25 years in the space. He's managed an apartment REIT. So a REIT that had thousands of apartments under management nationwide, and he was their rooftop manager. So anything related to ancillary income in general, but more specifically, the antenna leases were his thing. So he has thousands of antenna leases that he's been part of negotiating, equipment additions, rent reductions, new leases, and everything like that. So, and that's, and everything beyond that, we have a guy with 16 years experience, and then down to just young teachers that is a separate conversation of how I came up with that play. how to add that educational piece into the industry. But if you want to interrupt me with a question, go ahead. Otherwise, I'll go on.
No, please carry on. You're telling us how all this works. So by all means, please continue.
Yeah. So I found the lack of consultancy and also knowledge. Knowledge is a big piece here. Property owners want to hear and they want to be explained. So I took a teaching element and I actually identified a young lady that was a school teacher. She had great comprehension. She understands the industry very well. And I said, you know what, take your teaching skills and, you know, talk it all out. Explain to owners what they have, what they're sitting on, and how they should be going about it. And it's actually working miracles. So young, fresh, but having that kind of educational side to her. And it goes very far away. You have boards from condo associations or even municipal people involved in boards. They just, they listen. They sit back and listen and enjoy the educational part of it. There's so much information. We have attorneys and brokers that really defer to us for anything and everything related to wireless. And it's it kind of gives me that satisfaction that I was lacking while I was in the commercial real estate space. There was no satisfaction at a whole. It's a strong industry, high competitive, a lot of good things happening. Yet I was tired of being in such a competitive space with so many people offering on the same properties. I was like, every week onto the next property, I would wish I could take a step back into how commercial real estate is different than the antenna space. I would identify a deal. The broker would tell me, hey, Mayor, I got this new listing. I'll be putting it on the market next week. You want to be part of this? This is up your alley. I'd say, sure. What are we looking at? He said, it's going to probably be a bidding process. Final and best is due by Tuesday. And I would have 7 days to go, learn the zoning, learn development potential, understand if there's any environmental liabilities, things like that, structural. I would actually pull together teams of people, come down to a property, could be an hour or two away from my home, and we would have people test the environmental, just do some maybe vacuum testing on an oil tank, walk the building, pop some drop ceilings here and there, see what the structure's all about, go down to the local city, talk to the zoning people about it, talk to some board members, even set up meetings with mayors. I was full of drama, do it all in 5-6 days, and then only to submit my high final and best, and the broker would tell me, you know, I'm not supposed to be telling you this, but maybe you want to sharpen your pencil a little bit. And, you know, I win some, lose some, but you obviously know this. You'll lose most, right? 80-20. And then from that 80-20, 20% that you will win, you'll lose another 80%, maybe on round two. So you're down to like, what is it, like 4% out of 100. That's a lot of LOIs and a lot of work. And the antenna space, by coming in as a consultant with some kind of advantage there, I find it thrilling to be the, you know, we get a spotlight shining on ourselves saying, there's not that many people out there that could brag about having a collective experience on this scale and really represent the fine. This is an industry that actually soared through COVID. If you look at the charts and you see how different assets, how they did throughout COVID, you see the data centers and cell towers are just soaring right on top of the charts, highest and best. And right under that is probably the e-commerce, like industrial type of asset. So everyone pay their cell phone bills and the cell phone providers paid their rent. So the landlords did well. So it's a strong asset. Everyone's looking at it. A lot of REITs and publicly traded entities are actually looking to park money on these assets. So it's an aggressive space and owners that understand that it's something that we want to focus on. It's no longer like a side thing. It is a cherry on top of the pie, but we might as well have a nice big juicy cherry instead of letting someone dry it up for us. So that's it in a nutshell.
Man, that's fantastic. I love how you identified a niche and just went deep on that niche. What are some ways, you know, if somebody wants to get involved in this space, like, what do they do to mm-hmm. break into this industry?
Good question. So that's really the rule in every industry is connect to some great people that are in it. And they're just the type of person that's outgoing, outspoken. They don't think that their success is a secret sauce. They don't think that they have something to hide. They rather put their cards out on the table. Talk to those great people. And, you're really going to connect with them and get to learn the industry. And if it's something that talks to your heart and you have something to add to the industry, you could actually be a good player in the space. And you could actually talk about the opposite. You know, if someone is just looking to dabble in something short term, make a buck and move on, I wouldn't think that that's the kind of industry because there's a learning curve that's probably, it takes at least a half a year and probably up to a few years to be an expert, to really understand all the players over the last 25 years in the space, all the tower companies that kept on buying each other. So you have entities galore. They just every few years consolidate. And so when you're looking at an easement and an amendment and something like that, with LLCs incorporated in Delaware, and just you're like in a spider web. You don't know where to start and where to end. Does this have value? Does this not have value? There's a lot of experience, and you probably need a good network with people that are actually going to be dedicated in teaching you. Similar to commercial real estate, if someone wants to become a broker or an investor, you don't want to start doing things stupidly. But in this space, if you're coming in as a consultant and a broker, the information is a very important piece. So you want to really learn the ropes and know it well and have clients really respect your knowledge, because that's where the value is. The value is in the information and just knowing it all. So it's networking and networking with the right people and being in it for the right reason, like more of a long-term vision.
Yeah, I love that. And tell me, I guess, you know, when I hear your story, I think to myself, well, I wonder why Mayer didn't just go out and start buying all these up yourself. Like, because you do a lot of brokerage, you do a lot of lease negotiation, you help a lot of other people make money in the antenna space. So why didn't you just go out, double down and say, you know what, we're going to be owner operators of these and hold everything in-house?
Great question. It's a great thought. People ask it all the time. And the answer is simple, because you have to choose what you want to be. You have brokers and you have owners, and you can't be both. If you're a broker that's going to buy the good deals and continue to sell the sour deals, you're not going to be a real good broker. You have to make a decision. You have these great commercial real estate mortgage brokerage firms. Why didn't they ever think of establishing their own fund and start funding deals themselves like a bank? Mm-hmm. The advantage a broker holds is they have no strings attached. And that's actually Nexus's mission. No strings attached. We're not buyers. And so what we do is we identify multiple buyers in the space, and we're actually networking and learning. And anyone interested in acquiring these sites is welcome to reach out. We have many parties reaching out to us saying, hey, you know, we realize how this asset produces. We want to jump on board. We want to start buying them. How about start putting us in the mix? So as a broker, our clients rely on us that we're going to go into the open market and really tap into highest and best value. We represent the industry as a whole and not ourselves. And that's what sets us apart from anyone else in the space. You have multiple entities that are pretty much doing the same thing that we are. The difference between us and them is that we're brokers, so no strings attached. We don't represent one buyer. So we're not looking, it's not like the person knocking on your front door saying, hey, you want to sell your home to me? We'll do it for sale by owner. We'll rather the realtor approach, which is, you know, do you want to make a listing out of this? I'll put it out there, create competition, bring your highest and best bids, and we'll tell you your options. We'll tell you the reputation of each buyer, their ability to fund, their time flow, their timelines, and their paperwork, and everything that comes with it. There's a lot of variables in these transactions. So I find the broker approach to be a competitive edge within a competitive industry. So it's a unique industry and then a unique position within that industry. That summarizes it. And that's why we chose the broker route.
Understood. No, I think that's fascinating. And I love hearing the thought process.
I would add one little piece that there's some risk involved as well, which I didn't develop that kind of comfort to actually establish a fund to manage those assets myself. There is, as much as they perform throughout COVID for various reasons, which is obvious, the long-term play on these assets is a little bit more unknown than another industry. I would be more comfortable investing in industrial real estate and managing that fund rather than investing in telecom and managing that fund. It's the comfort of the long term is not the same. So real estate is called real estate for a reason. You have a deed, you own a piece of property. Don't forget, these assets are cash flowing, producing leases today. It doesn't take much for a tenant to notify they're exercising their termination rights, and the equipment's removed from the roof, and you're left with an abandoned easement space, which terminates on its own after a little period. So I'm a proud broker, but I can't say that I have the same stomach that the investors have. So that's another reason there.
And you bring up a valid point. I mean, one, I love your transparency and honesty in that, just in the sense mm-hmm. that this doesn't meet your own personal risk profile. It's a unique industry. Mm-hmm. It's one that obviously you love and have devoted your time and life to figuring out and helping others that want to invest in it do that. But I think it's also just appreciate your honesty, and it doesn't meet your risk profile. So that's really interesting. Tell us about the let's dive in on that a little bit more on the risk side of things, because I think from a benefit side of things, it should be, at least for me, it seems fairly obvious. Like, hey, you know, you've got a lease on a tower, you don't maintain it, no one calls you about it, they make a deposit into your account maybe quarterly or once a month, and that's basically the end of it. You're not responsible for anything. But what are the risks? I know you said they can call you, exercise their termination rights, but I'm picturing maybe not rooftop equipment, and at least not in places like New York City. I'm thinking I'm thinking like, you know, smaller rooftop equipment. But when I picture, you know, antenna leases, I'm picturing the big giant antennas. It seems like those would be very costly to just terminate and move somewhere else. No?
Correct. Take in mind, these are technology leases. So the need to operate there is based off technology. And I'll explain what I mean by that. If you look at any other industry within real estate, it's driven by demographics, supply and demand, right? So there's a population growing in an area, you could assume you'll need some more retail. There's some office need, there's need for, you name it, right? So there's things that are driven by population, and you could sort of predict by studying those demographics, and you get a little feel of, you could put a convenience store at this intersection and a bank there. There's a lot of things involved that people could actually put their fingers on. When it comes to technology, it's fascinating how it develops and evolves, and it comes out of left field with some, you know, some great mind either in San Francisco or up there or anywhere else in the world. Some great mind develops a new technology with a new capability. The extreme example would be satellite, and it kind of kicks everything out of the way. So we could go extreme here, black and white, and say, look at the record players, look at the beepers everyone used to carry around and get a notice to make a phone call by the payphone. And fast forward 20 years, and everyone's walking around with a smartphone with listening to podcasts all day, right? So things evolve quickly. And this specific lease is driven by technology, its engineering, and its capabilities. So if they come out with a new technology that has twice as strong ability to transmit frequencies, they'll be knocking out 50% of their sites. If they come out with a smaller type of facility, smaller antennas, which is fair to assume, everything shrinks in size over time, right? You look at the old computers and the new laptops and tablets. So you probably assume that they're going to want a rent reduction because they're not occupying the same amount of space. It's less invasive. So there's a lot of things that are going to evolve as technology changes. And so their justification for reducing your rents, they start sounding real. And that's basically a fear thing that we were seeing. There's property owners reaching out to us, forwarding us attached email that they received from their tenant, letting them know that they're upgrading their equipment and they're reviewing their portfolio. And this site seems to be falling under a watch because they're overpaying on the rent, not in line with the market rent. So they're giving them two options. It's either they want to agree to reduce the rates to the more acceptable market rate. So instead of getting $3,800, they're going to be looking forward to get $1,800, take a $2,000 monthly haircut, which is, by the way, worth like a little more than $400,000 on a buyout. That's a lot of money. An alternative would be that the tenant will not have a different choice, but look for alternative site where they could accomplish their market rate. Talk about relocating the equipment if it's going to be expensive for them. They might be doing an upgrade anyway. They're swapping out antennas every so often. And yeah, it will cost them $70,000 or maybe $150,000, depending on the build out, to relocate it. But that's not the end of the world for them. If they calculate their savings over a little short period of time, it justifies. So they're kind of in the driver's seat and they're the decision. You know, they have all the rights. Landlords are committed for a longer term than they are. They're usually committed to 30 days. Landlords commit themselves for 30 years. A little difference there. So someone has leverage over the other.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point you bring up there. Those are a lot of risks just things I wouldn't have certainly thought about. And it sounds like the industry standard makes those leases very operator friendly.
They definitely try accomplishing that. If there's no consultant involved, they usually do accomplish that. I want to reiterate on the last few minutes of the conversation that as a part of our core values, we hate scaring people, right? We're not in the business of selling risk. We don't want to tell people, hey, this is a sour asset. You're so exposing yourself to risk. You want to sell this thing to someone else. I think telling people how the future is going to play out is not fair because no one knows. But there, you could look back, right? Hindsight's 2020. So I can just tell everyone that from the track record, when people lose when they get termination notice that the tenant's leaving, they want to do something to themselves for turning away all these offers over the years. You have people that are saying goodbye to millions of dollars of cash that they would be able to cash out from these antenna leases at some point before something changed, right? Before it was terminated or before two companies merged and they terminated one of the two. So there's all these people that are seeing in the rearview mirror, the dollar symbol, but they really never understood why they should do it. So that's a fact. But to say that there's any risk involved in the future, we don't know. This industry might hang around for another 25 years, or in a short amount of time, someone's going to announce that they have a great service and they're selling it using different types of technology that's hosted on different types of devices, and this industry will shrink. So we shall see. Hard to predict.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think those are a lot of things that just make it a very interesting space. Talk to us about, and I know I'm going to ask for a broad answer here. because I know every site is different, every size. There's so many moving variables. It's like asking what's the cap rate for multifamily. What is a typical return that you find as an average that investors get on a, or maybe you can put it a different way, like what's the cap rate people are buying at in this space on average?
It's an interesting question because we don't apply cap rates to these assets, even though everyone wants to know what's the cap rate. And it's not driven by anything else than the stability of the lease, the stability of the tenant, and the cash flow, like rent increases and things like that. So that's really what drives the purchase price and the value of the lease. I would say if it's a healthy, well-performing lease, you're probably looking at best case scenario, mid 5 cap rate. And like worst case scenario, it could be up to like a 7.5 or 8 cap. So that's probably your answer there in a general.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, again, you know, buying in the mid 5s in a value add multifamily deal, just for comparison's sake, you know, give you some opportunity to, you know, there's some upside there for you as the buyer in that you can improve cash flow, you can increase rents, you can enact your value add plan, but that's not really possible with these assets because you're basically just, you know, you're buying a fixed income stream with potential rent bumps in the future written into the lease. Is that right?
Yes.
Right. Okay. So you're really just buying the stability of it. So you need to have an investor that says, hey, you know, I want a stable asset that produces a predictable income. End of the story. Does that sound about fair?
Pretty fair. Yeah. Each investor has their own model of how they look at it and what makes them excited about internal leases. Some investors get excited from near-term ending leases, and it's the opposite, contrary of commercial real estate standards, right? So, and the reason is because the upside of renegotiating it. So some property owners hesitate selling it before they do an amendment. They want to extend the term. They're actually hurting the value of their lease by doing that. So don't do anything sloppy before you consult. You're locking them into some terms that they would have been able to negotiate better. So they would actually favor to buy it before you reno. There's a lot of interesting variables there on near-term ending. The other thing is about who the tenant is and do they have a right of first refusal? Do they require a consent? Do they have equipment addition rights without adding to the rent? Do they have the things like that? There's a lot of different clauses that tenants take into their leases that drive the value dramatically. And so all these things are something that we abstract at our initial round of review. Property owners usually don't have a full paper trail. They're missing something, but we do that for them. We'll do like a forensic accounting analysis. We'll look at the rents. We'll look at the utility reimbursement, tax reimbursement. We want to make sure everything is up to speed. It's surprising to find how very organized firms are a little unorganized when it comes to wireless, and you can't blame them. It's a unique asset, and it's all in the fine print.
It is, and I think just for reference to reiterate your point there, you know, the reason you and I are even having this podcast is because I was looking at an asset here a few weeks ago, and on that asset, it was a parcel of land I was looking to buy with an antenna tower, a large, I don't know, what was that, 150 feet or 160 foot tower on that property. And the previous owner, I think if I recall correctly, he had clearly just kind of done back of the napkin handshake deal with a tower company. And all he just, you know, basically got a one-time lump sum payment, and that was the end of it. And they have a
very little money there.
Very little money there. Yep, they have a perpetual lease. With an easement on the property in perpetuity. And it's like the value of his land just went down, you know, significantly by not bringing somebody in that actually knows what they're doing. I mean, I would only, and this was now an inheritance property. And so his sons are trying to sell it, and there's no value there.
I'll make a fair assumption that it was a senior that was taken advantage of. If it sounds like an inheritance property, you see a lot of those. You know, a typical owner in America, if you look at the averages, they're in their 55 range and then hold the property for 20 years like that. So that you're talking about someone who's close to 70, 80, and it's not a big deal to try to sell them something with a handshake on a napkin. So yeah.
Right. Yeah. And they get whatever lump sum payment is. They think it's great because they had an asset that wasn't producing an income, and now they get a lump sum payment, but they don't know that they're leaving a lot of meat on the bone there, both for themselves and for their, for their future generations or even just resale value. So that's,
And I wasn't surprised. Like I told you then, when you showed me that opportunity, you see that. And that's actually the very thing I started off by telling you, and seeing these leases reconfirms the reason why we exist. Let's put an end to this nonsense, right? Let's empower property owners. Don't make these stupid decisions. Consult with us. Be smart. Just get out there, find a consultant and just consult. Right? Have a chat with someone. Doesn't have to cost you anything, really. Right? Just to know that there's help out there. Don't do things blindly. I find like it's a little cozy secret that owners have that, yeah, I have a relationship with wireless carriers. I negotiate these things myself. I got it all sorted out. I'm good there. All right. Have a good time. I mean, there's help out there. Yeah.
Right. That's absolutely awesome. You know, this has been an intriguing conversation. I appreciate you taking the time to come on today and really give us a kind of behind the curtain look at the antenna space and how that, you know, how the potential risks involved. Oh, one other question before I got to this, I'm looking at my notes here. Financing. Mm-hmm. What are people seeing? Are people paying all cash for these? Are they actually getting bank loans on them? What is, if you came in as a buyer, what does your typical buyer's, you know, financing and or cash situation look like on a deal?
So the real answer to it is that I don't know. They vary. There's no one size fits all. Every investor has their own source of funding. It's typically, they probably have a fund that they have access to cash, and then they bundle together multiple assets and they take a loan with some type of lender that's comfortable doing this type of, taking these types of assets. They're usually strong cash flowing producing assets for the first few years. And after that, there's a lot of uncertainty like we discussed. So to summarize the answer, it's usually it's cash purchases, you know, from larger funds, and then they bundle them together and take financing on those.
Got it. Yeah. I was curious what we saw in that space, if we are seeing, lending on.
Yeah. So talking about lending, it's just to throw out a little nugget there. Many property owners don't realize, but their current lender is not really calculating the cash flow from these towers for the purpose of the loan, meaning they still put a lien on it. They consider, you know, it's part of the asset, and you would need an FDA to release it if you were to consider selling it. So they have a lien on it. They encumbered it, but yet they didn't actually value it. And it's a question that a property owner should have with their lender or their mortgage broker. Am I getting, is this being calculated as part of my cash flow? Because if it's not, don't just let them throw a lien over it. Have it separated up front. So you'll always be flexible. So you could put it in a separate easement, have it under a separate entity, have them sign an SNDA when they start the loan, so it's not encumbered for no reason if they're not lending on it. So there's really, depending on who the lender is, if they're comfortable with the asset, I find that most lenders aren't calculating it and lending on it. But if someone knows of something else, here and there, you'll find a bank that's interested in lending on it. Usually the larger lenders, like the HUD and agencies are going to lend on it. So they just consider it cash flow. But community banks and anything like that, they're not comfortable with it.
Man, that's really interesting. Thank you again for taking the time to dive into this intriguing topic today. I think this is one of the more unique conversations and asset classes that we've talked about here on this show. So I do appreciate that. Mayor, I've got the final four mm-hmm. questions here for you. And I ask these same questions to every guest who comes on the show. So answer them mm-hmm. as you wish. But if I gave you, first question is this, if I gave you just $20,000 to invest in real estate with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
That's a great question. That's an interesting question. I actually thought about it. You know, I see it all the time. People post like, if you're stuck on an island and you have this and that, and it's the only way you get out of it, how do you think about it? So I would answer in short, the weird thing I would do is approach a property owner and do like an option agreement on his property, invest the $20,000 in making it look nicer, and then try to flip it. That would be the old way I would do these things, right? Something like that.
Right. No, I think that's great. That's great. Question number two is this. If you could help our listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Okay. That's a general mistake people make and in real estate as well. If you have an opportunity, you have an idea, you have a thought about something, put it out there. Don't hide it. I think there's many talented people that have great ideas that are just hiding it. They're afraid to put it out there. They have the old school secret sauce approach to life. They think that by keeping things a secret, you'll be more successful. And they don't realize by networking and throwing your ideas out there, just put it out on the table, chat with people about it. You'll learn, you'll gain 100 years of trial and error in just a few days by chatting with people. So just throw your thing out there. No one's reinventing any wheel. Whatever you're going to try, someone else tried already. So don't make the same stupid mistake as the next person did. Put your idea out there and listen to the people that have been doing this for a while. You'll quickly either qualify or disqualify your idea. So that's a little mistake that people should avoid making.
That's sage advice. I appreciate that. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Oh, obviously. Put a stop to property owners giving away hundreds of thousands of dollars daily to multi-billion dollar companies. Let them also keep their fair share. I think that's something that's making the world a better place.
I love it. I love it. Mayor, if our listeners want to get in touch with you and learn more about Nexus Towers, what is the best way to do that?
NexusTowers.com. We have a nice little blog there. We throw some stuff up there every day, here and there. And then I'm pretty active on LinkedIn as well. So just find me as Mayor Waldman. I post daily. I got some great ideas up there. No secret sauces. It's all about the reputation and who you are and how you do it.
Fantastic. Right? Mayor, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thank you, Sam. All the best. Take care. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.